Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 9th of Tammuz. With thanks to the OU, Rabbi Jack Abramowitz, and to David Hochhauser for help in putting these shiurim online, we will begin with the discussion of Rav Yaakov Ettinger in Shut Binyan Sion Simon Kof Chof Gimel 123, which was dated the 9th of Tammuz of Tuf Reish Yud of 1850. So much of this tshuva is actually the questioner. Questioner was the Talmid Chacham of some sort, who writes about the Gemara. He has a long claim that I think is very interesting, raises very interesting issues in halacha, and then we'll see Rav Yaakov Ettinger's response. And it's an example of where the questioner is very ready to argue with the sort of entire thrust of Jewish tradition, which sometimes some people do, and they say, you know, even though everybody has always said X, it seems to me that Y is true, and I think we should follow Y. So there are times when Rishonim and Achronim do that. I just was writing up another response before for Nissan sometime. Anyway, I was writing up a response, and Rav Shmuel Levi Vosner pointed out the Chazon Ish takes a position on Ma'amid Dima'amid of Sukkah, where he seems to go against that. He claims he's not doing it, but he seems to go against how everybody else understood most of the Rishonim in terms of whether or not how we build a Sukkah. So there you have times when people go against everything that came before, and we think they made a good point. So now, for the 9th of Tammuz, this man writes to Rav Yaakov Ettinger, to the Binyan Sion, and he says, there's a Gemara background that we need to know. Is the Gemara assumes there are two different ways in which we have an obligation, in which at least men, and the question here today is going to be about women and about slaves, non-Jewish, partially converted Jewish, non-Jewish slaves. You have a non-Jew who becomes a slave to a Jewish person, and he partially converts to Judaism. So there's two levels of the obligation to have children. There's Piru Verivya, right? Piru or Vu, the mitzvah to have children. That is understood by the Gemara to be a mitzvah to have a boy and a girl, and that clearly applies only to men and possibly to slaves, but not to women. And that's for a reason that we don't need to get into right now. The Gemara talks about, although I will, the Gemara talks about the fact that it says, Piru Vu Bilu Arta Kivshua, fill the land and conquer it. The Gemara says, Derech Ish Lichbosh V'in Derech Isha Lichbosh. That it's the idea of conquering the land is an obligation, is something that men do and not women. So it assumes that women are not included in that. But the Gemara also notes a pasuk in Yeshayahu says, Lo tohu v'ra'a la shevet yitzara, that Hashem didn't create the world to be tohu, to be unsettled, to be untended, to be just wild and confused, but to be settled. So that idea, la shevet, the Gemara assumes that in this context, in the context of this responsum, it will be taken for granted that that applies to having children. The Gemara applies to that context. The Gemara says, even though you've had one, two children already, you still have an issue of lashevet, you should have more children. Also, there's an issue of la'erev, which is another issue that the Gemara brings up, because the pasuk says, baboker zrad zarecha, v'la'erev al tanach yadecha, and that's assumed to mean that you plant in the morning, and you plant in the evening, and that could be true of children, it can be true of students, it can be true of lots of things, and therefore the continuing obligation to have children. But the Gemara applies the loto yivad shavitzara to an example that will come up in our responsive, so I might as well mention it now. The Mishnah talks about a slave who was owned. An easy way for it to happen is owned by partners. So, you know, we have two partners own a slave. One of them frees the slave for whatever reason. So another slave is half a partner, half a slave, half free. What are you going to do? So Beit Hillel originally suggested in the Mishnah that the slave would work 3 days a week for the master, and 3 days would be on his own. And Beit Shammai say to him, well, that helps in terms of work, but what about the fact that this slave now can't marry anybody? Why can't he marry anybody? When he was a slave, he could marry another slave, a woman slave, and then he could be married. If you were free, he could marry a regular, once a slave is freed, he becomes a full Jew. He can marry a Jewess, right, a woman, a Jewish woman. And so you say, well, don't get married to anybody. So Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai says, no, there's a problem of La Shev Yitzara. The Torah wants the world to be settled. That means that fundamentally we understand and assume that men need to have the possibility of having children, and in the Mishnah there, Beit Hillel agree, and therefore they say you have to get the second owner to free him as well. Okay, so that's the mitzvah of Lashevet. It is a secondary mitzvah. It is a mitzvah of Divrei Kabbalah. It is a mitzvah expressed in the other parts of Tanakh than the written Torah that tells us that there's an obligation to have Lashevet. The man writing to the Binyan Sion says that I think, and then he puts in parentheses, and Tosfos clearly disagrees with me, and many of the and there are important Rishonim who disagree with me. If I make a mistake, Hashem should pardon me. So this man is approaching a topic by saying, yeah, I see all the Rishonim hold something, I think they're wrong. What am I going to do about it? So that's an interesting experience of its own, worthy of a discussion at another time. But let's just look at the substance of what he has to say. He says, I think it's not that the slave is obligated, and it's not that a woman slave could be obligated in this. It's not even that a woman who was a Bat Chorin could be obligated in this. I think it's only the master or the court that they have to make sure that a slave has the possibility of getting married. Kideshi, now this is what he says, Kideshi kaimu heim mitzvah shevet. So they can fulfill the mitzvah of shevet, meaning that he's sort of understanding that Yishayahu was addressing only Jews. And that the Jew and the obligation isn't only on the individual Jew, it's apparently on the master of a slave or on a court to make sure that all the men in the area have the ability of being involved in procreation and settling on the world. But he says he doesn't think the slave has a chiyuv obligation, and he doesn't think the woman has an obligation, not her, and not to help somebody else necessarily. I'm sorry, not somebody else. And nobody else has the obligation to help a woman necessarily be able to procreate. That meaning, he had said, when it comes to the slave himself isn't obligated, but the court has to make sure it can happen, or the master can make sure it has to happen. But that's not true of a woman. So if somehow, let's say there were two partners who owned a partially converted female slave, and one of them freed her, this guy writing the letter says there's no reason, he thinks, why the other master, why Beit Shammai or Beit Hillel would hold, you have to free the woman so she can be able to have children, because, that's what he says, because we hold that women aren't obligated in pure Yavirivya, in the obligation to have children, that was to men. So when you see the mitzvah, when it comes to Divrei Kabbalah, when the Navi, when Yishayahu comes and talks about the mitzvah of Lashevet, he must be talking within the context of the obligation of period review of having children. So that's his basic claim. Comes to slaves, they're not obligated, but people around them, like the court, like the Beit Din, are obligated. When it comes to women, there's no obligation whatsoever. That's what he holds, and he says he thinks that solves several issues that he had. So one is, when Yishayahu says, Lo tov ra'a l'shevet tzara, was being said to slaves, it's being said to Jews. So I think, you know, it's not my job to answer his questions, but I think that that's unclear, because I think Yishayahu is expressing to us the will of Hashem. If Hashem lets us know, if a Navi lets us know, if a prophet lets us know that Hashem wants the world to be settled, that would seem to apply to everybody. And yeah, the words of the Nevi'im apply to non-Jews as well. So there's a technical mitzvot, so that's the whole question. But when Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel don't say, they say, the Pasuk is letting us know that this applies to this slave as well. Anyway. Possible. Let's go on. Second thing, if Tosfos and Rishonim were right, then why did the Tana say that, to leave out that information, that a woman has an obligation of Shevet? Now, where do we see a Mishnah that says it? So that's a problem. Third problem he raises is, we've seen actually a debate in a Mishnah about whether a woman is Chayevet Bepir Yevarivya. So why didn't the Chachamim in that Mishnah, which is in Yevamot 65b, who held that women aren't obligated in Pir Yevarivya, why didn't they say, okay, they're not obligated in Yevarivya, but they are obligated in Shevet? So that's leaving out vital information. He thinks also that the Mishnah that talks about the slave that's partially freed and says, listing all the problems with leaving him as a partially freed slave, they say, v'halo, the way the Mishnah expressed it is, v'halo lo nivra olam ela lepirya v'rivya. The world was created so that people should have children, and you're keeping this man from having children. If he has a personal obligation of Shevet, that it has to be to settle the world, it should just say it that way. Why does it bring up Pirya v'rivya? That's a question. Again, I'm not answering these questions because we're going to leave it to Rav Yaakov Ettlinger to respond when we get to his opinion in just a second. And then another issue that he raises is, why didn't the Mishnah say, so the way the Mishnah talks about this slave who's partially freed, he says, talks about the tzad avdut, the aspect of him that is still owned by the partner who didn't free him yet, and the tzad chayrut, or the tzad ivri. So the Mishnah, why didn't the Mishnah, we're talking about the tzad ivri, talk about the obligation of period of review at all? It didn't say, you know, he's got to have an obligation. And so he says, we showed him, say, well, he's an anus. So, meaning they said, you're going to leave him as a tzad evet, can't get married to this. Anyway, that's what he says. So they talk about an onus. So he says, in terms of Shevet, it's also an onus, and why not just say he don't have to free him at all? So it must be that it's the Beit Din has the problem. That's his conclusion. And then He notes that the toasters can get in him. And Alpha Bey wonders about the fact that a shifcha, a woman slave, right, who's half freed and half not. So there's a case where the Gemara talks about that she was, that Chazal saw that people were treating her loosely because she didn't belong to anybody. She didn't really belong to a master because she's only half owned by somebody, and she was half on her own, but she wasn't on her own so she could get married. So they forced somebody to free her, her other master, to free her so that she could get married because of the problem of people. She was becoming promiscuous, it turns out. It looks like, you know, she was looking, who knows why it's happening. People felt that she was an easy target and she gave in. It's unclear exactly how it happened, but Chazal felt that since she wasn't linked to somebody, that was fostering a situation of promiscuity. So Tosfos there is a question of, I don't understand why you're saying it for those reasons. Why not just say she also has a mitzvah of Shevet and she can't get married and that's going on there? So Tosfos has an answer there, which we don't need to get into because he doesn't get into, but he says, I don't like their answer. So we're getting a little sense of this questioner here. He's a bright guy, he's a learned guy, but he's a little ready to reject that came before him rather than to find answers for that which came before him. Question number 9 is, he says, that discussion which says that if he'd been a whole slave, he wouldn't have cared because he can marry a shifcha. So this guy says, he can't, what he's talking about, he can't marry a shifcha. He doesn't get to choose. It's his master who gets to choose who he lives with, and he doesn't have any choice in it. If his master says, I want you to live with this woman and bear children with her, that he doesn't have a choice about it. So he doesn't have a choice about it. How could you say that an Eved, a full Eved, that a full slave, has a mitzvah of Shevet because he doesn't have any ability to handle it? So that's his claim. So in other words, his claim is that it must mean, therefore, that it's the master who's got the obligation, since the master is the one who could actually arrange for him to have children while he's an Eved. And he says, and by the way, when I say that a woman is not obligated in this mitzvah, that to me explains another halakha in Eben Ezer. Halakha in Eben Ezer talks about the fact that we have a tradition that if a woman marries two men, marries a man, and that man sadly passes away, and then she marries another man, and sadly that man passes away as well, so the halacha seems to be that we wouldn't have her marry another man, because we're worried that there's some issue there. It's like the case of what's called an isha kotlanit, right? But why not the same, why is it the same issue in reverse? So the Shulchan Aruch and Eben Ezer and Simon Tet says, because when the man gets married, he's keeping a mitzvah. In Shomer Mitzvah Lo Yida Davara, people who are keeping mitzvahs don't have bad things happen to them, but the woman's not doing a mitzvah. But says the questioner to Rabbi Yaakov Ellinger, if the woman is Chayevet and Shevet, if this mitzvah that we have, if Yishayahu's letting us know that the world was meant to be settled, people have to be involved being settled, then she's also doing a mitzvah, so she should also be able to marry a third husband. Then he closed by noting there is a Yerushalmi that seems to say very clearly the obligation of Shevet applies to the slave himself, but maybe that's not exactly, that it's just a loose expression of the matter, that it's really about the master or the Beit Din, but they just said it that way. So that's the way, that's the question. And he writes to the Binyan Tzion and says, can you let me know what you think of what I'm seeing? Right. So the Binyan Tzion says, I think in your first claim, it's not true. But the idea that a slave is not included himself in the mitzvah of Shevet, it's really the master or the Beit Din who are included in the mitzvah of Shevet, are obligated to make sure the slave has the possibility of having children. He thinks it's not true. First of all, there's the Yushami that he referred to at the very end, which says very clearly. But he says, but more, the Mishnah itself. So the Mishnah in Gittin Mem Aleph Amen Aleph reads like this. I'm supplying this. They both knew the Mishnah themselves. They didn't need to quote it. Somebody who is half a slave and half of a ben chorin, half freed, oveda rabo yom echad, benasmo yom echad, works for himself one day, and then for the master one day, the very Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai omrim, tikantem et rabo, benasmo lo tikantem. Beit Shammai say, but you haven't helped him, right? You've helped the master, but not him. Lisa shifcha yefshar. He can't marry a shifcha because he's half free, and he can't marry a regular Jewish woman because he's half slave. And then Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel agree and concede to Beit Shammai. So the Binyan Tzion says, if he thought that the mitzvah is only on the master, then Beit Shammai's words don't make any sense. What did Beit Shammai say? Ve'et atzmo lo tikantem. Right, but it's not true. If you, the questioner, have placed the obligation of Shevet regarding this slave upon the master, what Beit Shammai should have said was, et rabo tikantem, the master you've helped out regarding his work, but not regarding his mitzvah of Shevet. But that's not what they say. They say you've helped the master, you figure the master, help the master figure out how he can have half a slave, but you haven't helped the master figure out the ish, right? It should have said, tikantem avodat rabo, velo tikantem mitzvat rabo. That's how the Binyan Sion puts it, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger puts it. But what about all the other questions the guy has? So now he's going to go through the questions and point out where he thinks the answers are more clear than this man had thought. He says, in terms of the question of v'chidiber hanavi la'avadim, did the Yeshayahu speak to slaves? He says, I'm surprised. We're talking about an Eved Yisrael. So one answer would have been, the answer that I sort of suggested as I was reading through it quickly was, well, yeah, the words of the Nevi'im or Dvar Hashem, they apply to everybody. So even if you don't go that far, the Binyan Zion says, I don't understand what you're talking about, the slave, to be a Jewish slave, to be a slave of a Jew. A Jewish slave is a whole different thing. I think that Jewish slave, anyway, Jewish slave is a whole other thing. But to be a slave for a Jew, the tradition was, the slave had to do a brit milah, he had to be circumcised, and he had to be circumcised and accept upon himself the mitzvos of an eved, those mitzvos that apply to a slave, which is many, many mitzvos. It's around the same exact, it's around the same standard of mitzvot as ordinary, regular Jewish women have. There are some exceptions, this might be one of them, because the Binyan Sion is going to agree that women are not included in the mitzvah of Shevet, so there are exceptions, there are places where the slave is obligated in more things than the woman, but he's in some sense Jewish. It's just that he's an Eved Kenani. So if that's true, right, he's chayav in kol mitzvot, other than basically mitzvot sheshesman grama, obligations that have some time component to them, then why shouldn't the pasuk in Yeshayahu apply to him? Lama lo yegam mikol mitzvot shevet yitzara. So he says, the question of whether the slave is obligated in period of rivia, because one answer might have been, well, if he's not obligated in period of rivia, let's remember, a woman's not obligated in period of rivia, but in having children, the basic biblical requirement, the Torah mitzvah to have children, but that was because ein derech ha'isha lichbosh, it's not her way to conquer. When it comes to a slave, the question is, well, what is a slave? Is a slave, well, by virtue of being a slave, he can't conquer anything. He's a slave, although theoretically they could take a slave to war and have him fight, but he's fundamentally a slave, or you could say he's a man, and by virtue of being a man, he's included in the obligation. So the Binyan Sion points out there are two positions of that. Tosot and Chagiga seem to assume that he's included in the obligation of period of Rivia, and Tosin Gittin quotes a Rivam that he's not obligated. And so he, the Binyan Sion, is also known as the Aruch Laner, right? One of the confusing things that can happen in Jewish literature is that since we come to call people by the name of their books, if you have two famous books, then you might be known as by your books. People won't realize it. So for another example that pops into my head, you might hear people talk about the Kesef Mishnah, and you might have other people talk about the Beis Yosef, and you might hear other people talk about the Shulchan Aruch, but guess what? They're all the same man. They're all Rav Yosef Karo, who is this remarkable, remarkable figure. I just recently saw a tshuva of the Maaseh Binyamin that we just shared, maybe yesterday. Now, we shared it beforehand, but the Maaseh Binyamin referred to Rav Yosef Karo as the Muflag Bedoros, a remarkable person. Anyway, so it can get confusing if you only know the names of the book. So the Binyan Sion, which is a book of responsa, was also the other author of the Aruch Laner commentary on the Gemara. So in Yevamos, he had said, I wrote a little bit of a proof that I think an Eved, a slave, is not obligated in Puria Verivia. And he said that part of the reason why he thought that was true, in support for the view that it wasn't true, is that we hold that an Eved ein zaro miyuchas acharav. This is a topic of its own, but the Gemara assumes that when a slave has children while a slave, those children belong to the master, and that slave doesn't, that in the whole context of slaves, there's not an issue of yichus, there's no lineage line. So I think that means things like, I'd have to check it out, and I haven't checked it out recently, but I think that means things like, right, you have a slave child, you want to then mate that slave child with somebody else, the Arias issues won't apply the same way, because we hold that slaves don't have yichus. So, but if you don't have yichus, then you can't have period of arivia, because period of arivia, the obligation of procreation, means the obligation of procreation of children who are miyuchas to you, children who are linked back lineage-wise to the father. And if he doesn't have that, that gets complicated in other areas, because, for example, the halacha is that if a man has children while not Jewish, and non-Jews may or may not have an obligation period of Yovel, but they have an obligation, children while they're non-Jewish, I think they don't have one, but if you have children, you're non-Jewish, and the non-Jewish children convert with the father, even though halachically we say that once one converts, those relationships go away, because it's a new person here, they've completely changed, nonetheless, we think that they've fulfilled the mitzvah period of Yovel with those children as well. How that works is not our issue, but the answer is, but on the other hand, if a Jew has non-Jewish children, God forbid, has relations with a non-Jewish woman, they have children, those children aren't his halachically, right? Because they don't have any yichus, and therefore they don't count in terms of the obligation of period of rivia. So that's a problem for the slave. The slave has no way to fulfill period of rivia because he doesn't have yichus. But when it comes to Shevet, we don't require miyuchas for Shevet. Shevet is about sort of, you know, popping out children, as it were. It's not about the connection. I mean, period of rivia is about I, as a man, have children, and they go off and populate the world, or are part of populating the world and conquering the world in the name of this family, right? In the name of this man's lineage. That's the obligation period of Rivia. When it comes to Leshevet, the Pasuk Yishayahu did not make any such requirements. It's just have children, make the world settled without any particular connection necessarily. So if that's true, then an Evet should be included in that. So when Rav Yaakov Ettlinger is claiming this in the Binyan Tzion and the Arch Laner, what I think he's fundamentally saying is that Shevet, for all that it's very similar to period of Rivia, has a slight difference to it. And therefore, if the only reason we excluded a slave from period of rivia was a technical detail in terms of lineage, and that was an aspect of that mitzvah, not this one, I can include and assume that the slave is included in Shevet and not in period of rivia. And that, by the way, he says, answers the whole reason of, you said, how can I obligate a slave? Because the master controls him. But the answer is, the master doesn't control him in terms of the master being allowed to stop him fulfilling a mitzvah. It's true the master gets to pick which maid he lives with, but if you told me the master was going to refuse to allow the man to be married, to have a wife, as it were, a slave wife, while he's a slave, the implication, the other Chaner thinks, the implication that that's not true. That's not in the power of the master. Why not? Because this slave would be like, can the master stop the slave from doing a mitzvah that the slave is required, is obligated in? We said the slave is obligated in most mitzvot. So, you know, comes the slave and he has a mitzvah, whatever it may be. Let's say he has a mitzvah of Shabbos. He has to keep Shabbos like the rest of us. He has to make Kiddush. The master says to him, no, don't make Kiddush. Of course he has to make Kiddush. And the master can't do it because that's telling him to go get the Torah. Same thing would be true, the Arch Laner says, the Binyan Tzion says, would be true of keeping the slave from marrying somebody. It's true, he gets to choose who the somebody is, but he doesn't get to choose that there not be a somebody. And that's why it could be an obligation on the slave, even if the master theoretically has a veto power. That doesn't change anything. That's the answer to that question. And then a final question that he deals with, I mean, he also says that the question of Kofin is Rabo, Beklemen Adam Chatei. So Tosus already answered that, and they had a question on the Rashba. It's not important the exact question to remember, but his answer is that he thinks that here what we have is a meeting of differing obligations, because in fact, the Torah doesn't really allow us to free slaves. Why doesn't the Torah allow us to free slaves? We have to bequeath our slaves for reasons we can't get into here because it's not our issue. But the Arch Laner is pointing out, the Binyan Tzion is pointing out, that when we tell the master to free his half a slave, in fact, that's a challenge a little bit halachically. There's an halachic issue there, because we shouldn't really be telling him to free the slave, because he has an obligation to own a slave. So if he has an obligation to own a slave, why are we telling him to free a slave? So therefore, the answer is that he has an obligation to own the slave. The slave has an obligation to get free because he needs to fulfill the mitzvah of Shevet, and we end up saying that Shevet is a more important mitzvah. This is what the Binyan Tzion says. The Shevet Tzarahi mitzvah gidola yoter, which is surprising because v'inachaltem otam, the obligation to own a slave, is actually a biblical mitzvah, and this is a mitzvah medivrei Kabbalah. This is a mitzvah that appears in Tanakh, and yet because it's about keeping the world going and having the world continue, the Binyan Tzion takes for granted that that's more important. That's what the Gemara meant by saying we're going to force the master to free it. So that's the rejection part of the response. Now he moves on to the acceptance part. He says, in terms of the fact that the mitzvah of Shevet doesn't apply to women, just like the mitzvah of Rivia, he thinks, I think that's right. In other words, one could have said since they're different from each other, how do we know they're different from each other? We just said before how they're different from each other. Different from each other in things like the periphery requires yichus, requires lineage, and shevet doesn't require lineage. So I might have thought maybe they're just completely different mitzvot. True, they're both mitzvot that express themselves in having children, but maybe they're very different mitzvot. Therefore, maybe I could have said, just like I do by a slave, maybe I could have said, it's true, I could have said, it's true, women are not obligated in periphery, yeah? But they are obligated in shevet. So Rav Yaakov Ettlinger accepts the claim they're not. And there's a... But when it comes to Zariah, he brought from Gittin, he says, I don't think it's Zariah. Whatever, he explained that before. He says, we haven't seen the mitzvah of Shevet anywhere regarding a woman, even a place where it should be. Tosus had said what I said just a second ago, that just like a slave doesn't have an obligation to period for Rivian, that's connected to him being like a woman in some ways, and yet he has an obligation to Shevet, so therefore Shevet could apply to a woman as well, but Tosus Chagiga thought that period for applied to a slave even though it didn't apply to a woman, so that broke that link. So the fact that now we're going to say a slave is obligated in Shevet doesn't have to mean that a woman is obligated in Shevet, because we just broke the link. We said when it comes to these kinds of procreation mitzvot, we don't have any evidence that they're linked to each other, and that what applies to an Evet applies to a woman, and therefore maybe she is indeed Peturah, not obligated in this mitzvah. But what's the reason, he says? Because after all, as I said before, if the reason for period of Rivia is that a woman doesn't tend to conquer like men tend to conquer, Shevet isn't about conquering, it's about settling, it's about being around. And women are around, so why not? So he says he doesn't know. He saw Peter Yoshua, who thought also there's no mitzvah of Shevet with women, and it's against the Tosfos, as we said, because it's not mentioned. And he says, I don't know, but he should have mentioned that when the Gemara talks about Shevet, it does say the world can't survive without men and without women. Sounds like it should be a mitzvah of Shevet in them, because existence, you know, there is no such thing as the human race without both men and women. So it would seem like there should be a mitzvah of Shevet that applies. So why shouldn't it apply to women? This says, and also I saw Aran, who ran in Kiddushin, who talks about the fact that he thinks there is a mitzvah for women in terms of procreation. He says it's true, women don't have an obligation of periphery, of having children in the biblical sense of, not the biblical sense of having children, but the biblical sense of the obligation to have children. But he says it's clear from the Gemara that women should get married and they perform a mitzvah when they get married. How do I know that women perform a mitzvah when they get married? Because the Gemara talks about the fact that it's a bad idea to get married if you haven't ever met the person you're marrying. This today comes up in, you know, certain circles where people, you know, don't date or court, have a courtship or anything like that. They just meet, you know, one time for half an hour. So why do they meet at all? If they're going to really fundamentally trust their parents to make the shidduch for them, why do they meet at all? So the answer is there's a Gemara that says you have to meet. So you could talk about how long that has to be for, what constitutes a meeting, and things like that. We're not going to get into that. But when the Gemara says that, the way it says it is that even though a man can get married through a messenger, right? Somebody tells me, you know, in Uzbekistan, there's this great woman. You should really marry this woman. Absolutely, she's got all the milas. She's perfect for a great family. This, I'm allowed, halakhically, I would be allowed to send a messenger to go marry her. The Gemara says, however, A, you shouldn't do it unless you've met her. But let's say I've met her and I know I want to get married to her, but I don't have an easy way of creating the marriage, and I'm worried she marries somebody else, so I make a messenger. But the Gemara says, mitzvah bo, you tell me bishlucho. But it's better to do a mitzvah on your own, because it's better to do mitzvahs on your own. The Gemara gives examples of that. When it comes to a woman as well, the Gemara says a similar thing. Where there, the Gemara thinks that anyway, whatever, but it does say mitzvah ba yoter mibishlucha. It's better for her to get married on her own because she's doing a mitzvah on her own. It says the Ran, you see, she's doing a mitzvah. So if she's doing a mitzvah by getting married, what's the mitzvah that she's doing by getting married? So theoretically, you could have just said, oh, the Gemara just means whenever you're doing a ceremony, it's better to do it on your own. But if it's not a mitzvah ceremony, why should you do it on your own? There's no Gemara that says, you know, if I'm selling my cow, it's better I do it on my own and not through a shaliach. I'm allowed to use a shaliach, right? Wah. So the answer there is there's no mitzvah to sell your cow. So apparently there's a mitzvah here. So the Ran says it's to get married. The Binyan Sion, was the Oracle Aner, which is why he got me confused. Binyan Sion says that Ran implies there's a mitzvah. And if there's going to be a mitzvah, and we know it can't be the mitzvah period of Rivia, must be the mitzvah of Shevet. And then he suggested maybe the Tosfos, who said that the mitzvah of Shevet, what they meant was that she's vital to the mitzvah of Shevet. Not that she has an obligation of Shevet, the mitzvah period of Rivia, He says the hymen is perivative, which isn't quite. It's slightly different. But what he means is maybe she doesn't have an obligation to have children at all. And if she chooses not to have children, that's fine. But she's necessary to helping the man have fulfill his mitzvot. And maybe that's what it means. So maybe, in fact, she has no independent obligation. Maybe when the Ron says she's doing a mitzvah by getting married, he doesn't mean she's doing a mitzvah because she's going to fulfill her mitzvah shavet. She's doing a mitzvah because she's creating a situation where the man in question can fulfill his mitzvah of Shabbat. And therefore, that would be that would explain that situation and still leave it true that the woman doesn't have her own independent obligation. He's not sure about that. He's going back and forth. And he says, the Rambam seems to apply the woman has no obligation whatsoever because the Rambam points out in Hilchos Isuri Bia, the Rambam gives conflicting evidence. In Hilchos Isuri Bia, the Rambam says that a woman can stay unmarried if she wants to. Or she can marry a man who is unable to have children. Right? That's what the rabbi wrote in Hilchos Yisurei Bia. So that sounds like she has no obligation to have children whatsoever. Whereas in Hilchos Ishus, he agrees with the Ran. He passes that Gemara and says, mitzvah ba, yeter mishlucha. So it sounds like there's a mitzvah to get married. So if there's a mitzvah to get married, how did he paskin that she has the ability and the right? Therefore, he says, he thinks the answer is that fundamentally she's not obligated. It's that she has the obligation to help a man because the man has the obligation. So if a man wants to marry her who's obligated in Shevet, she should, and there's nothing wrong with the man, and she likes the man, loves the man, she wants to live with the man, so then she's fulfilling a mitzvah in helping him. So that's why I mean mitzvah b'yoter b'vishlucha. But if the person wants to marry her is a man who can't have children, and she's fine with that, she has the right to. Or if no man ever offers marriage to her, and that's fine with her, then that's fine too. And that's the way the Aruch Haner, the Binyan Tzion, understands the situation. So with this man who was ready to reject the views of the Rishonim, the Oracle Lanier, but you see, you're being a little too hasty when it comes to the Evid. I think the Evid has been so shevet like the Rishonim everything understood. When it comes to the woman, I think if you look at the Rishonim, what you come up and realize is that there is a relevance of shevet to her, but it's not her mitzvah. The way to understand the Rishonim best is that it's her obligation. If a man wants her help or needs or is looking to her for help and she sees no problem with the man, then it's her obligation to help him out, and that would be the way to fill it out. So that is some discussion of the mitzvah of shevet, the subsidiary mitzvah of procreating, the mitzvah of settling the world, a discussion of that issue regarding women and regarding slaves, and by implication regarding men, for the ninth of Tammuz from the Binyan Tzion, the Aruch Laner. Well, thanks again to the OU, Rabbi Jacob Rawitz and David Hochhauser. Have a great day.